Well, almost all of you made it back after the first lesson, so I'm encouraged by that. One of you ran away. Ty was his name, but he went to preach, but that's just an excuse. I scared him away. So it's good to be with you. Appreciate so much the friendliness and kindness that you've shown over the years. We have shown up several times, and yes, Mr. John's the one that asked if I'd come and preach, and so if you don't like what you hear, you know who to blame. The gospel tells us a lot about the things that Jesus, and in particular his ministry, entailed. Of course, we know there's a whole lot more that has not been written down. John tells us that the world couldn't contain everything. But one of the things that I find very interesting is that the Bible tells us that there were always people searching for Jesus. And there's various aspects, various reasons as to why they would have been doing that. But people were searching for him pretty much wherever he went. And that would seem to be a very good thing, right? But that's not necessarily the case. I want to consider with you some reasons why people sought after Jesus, and then make some applications, ask some questions for us. But first of all, we're going to notice just a few groups, and I tried my best to kind of lump these in together. It's not a perfect lumping, but it will suffice for our purposes. Those who sought after Jesus, if you look over in Mark chapter 1, Mark chapter 1, starting with verse 32. Mark chapter 1, starting in verse 32. At evening, when the sun had set, they brought to him, that is Jesus, all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And then he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. And Simon and those who were with him searched for him. And when they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." But he said to him, "Let us go to the next towns that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I have come forth." And this first grouping, I'll just call kind of the masses in general, as well as his family, that we'll note in just a moment. But the word of Jesus, his fame, was spreading pretty quickly. And people were seeking him out for a number of various reasons. And the text tells us in this particular case, the whole town comes out and is standing at his door and pressing and searching for him. And so we find that in the early morning hours, he goes and heads out to go and do some praying by himself. But he tells us that the reason everybody was searching for him was not because of the miracles he had done, in the sense of they were convinced of his authority, they were convinced of his power and their need for him. It's because of the miracles. Now, don't get me wrong, the miracles were meant to catch people's attention, but Jesus clearly cites in this text their reasoning is not as high as it should be. Their desire for me is a lot more carnal than God wanted it to be. Also notice with me in Matthew chapter 12, when it comes to members of his family, Matthew chapter 12, we'll start in verse 46. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. And one said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you." But he answered and said to them, the one who told him, "Who is my mother and who is my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." If you put this together with the accounts from Mark and John, we find out that not only was his family searching for him, but some members of his family thought he was nuts. They think he's out of his mind. What are you doing? You know, you've suddenly, after about 30 years of living a normal Jewish male life, he suddenly becomes this teacher, and they think he's out of his mind, and they're upset, and they're going to get a hold of him and knock some sense into him. And so they're not believing. They're searching for him, but they're searching for him to kind of rein him in, so to speak. Not out of a conviction of his messiahship, certainly. And so we see these masses searching for Jesus for his miracles, but for the carnal side, his family seeking to rein him in. And then we have another group over in John chapter 7. John chapter 7. John chapter 7 and verse 10. But when his brothers had gone up, then he also went to the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. And the Jews sought him at the feast and said, "Where is he?" And there was much complaining among the people concerning him. Some said, "He's good." Others, "No, on the contrary, he deceives the people." However, no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. We have this grouping of the Jews and the Pharisees. John tends to use the term in his gospel for the Jews as a reference to the leadership. Pharisees, Sadducees, you know, kind of this group in general of religious leaders. So the religious leaders who would prove to be his biggest critics and most hostile toward him, they were looking for him. They were searching for him, wondering where he was. And Jesus had sought out to keep a low profile because he knew the time wasn't ready for the ultimate confrontation that he would have to have. But throughout his entire ministry, these guys sought after him. And it culminates over in John chapter 18. John chapter 18, I know we're kind of going warp speed here, but that's because this is the setup, our main thoughts. In John chapter 18, verse 1 beginning, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, I'll get it out there eventually, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. And Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. There, Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" And they answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said, "I am he," they drew back and fell on the ground. So this confrontation culminates in something that I find to be very, very interesting. You see these guards, right? And sometimes we picture thinking, how can they not know who Jesus is? But they're in the garden. It's nighttime. It's late in the night. Jesus has been praying. And obviously there's a lot weighing on his mind. And Judas brings this detachment. And they've got torches because it's dark outside. They can't see real well. And it's not like they had a wanted poster of Jesus up on the walls of Jerusalem with his mug. They wouldn't know him unless they had seen and talked to him. And so these troops are looking for him. And apparently amongst this place were a number of people. And Jesus steps forward and he says, "Well, who are you guys looking for?" And I can just imagine the soldiers kind of being like, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, "Well, that's me." And they fall over themselves. And you stop and think about that for just a minute. How much must they have vilified Jesus to these soldiers for them to react that way? I mean, you'd think that he just said, "I'm the guy with the ebonic plague standing right next to you, and I just coughed in your face." I mean, their reaction was so frightened and shocked that I can only deduce from that they were looking for a really bad guy. That's how much these Jews, the Pharisees, the Jewish leadership, had vilified Jesus. That says a lot just about the reaction of these men. Well, in a third group that we see over in John chapter 12, and that's the Gentiles. John chapter 12. Starting in verse 20. John 12, verse 20. Now there were certain Greeks among those who came up to worship at the feast. And they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and they asked him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." After Lazarus had been raised from the dead, even the Pharisees said, "We can't stop this guy. Everyone's going after him. Everyone's searching for him." Even Greek proselytes come to the disciples and are saying, "Hey, we want to see Jesus." And that's, of course, not the first time that this happens. You've got the Samaritan woman, the Canaanite woman, the centurion. We know that Gentiles would seek him out just from what the Gospels have recorded for us. And there are various folks who sought after Jesus for various reasons. But there's one group that we haven't talked about yet, and that's the most obvious, and that is those who sought after Jesus because they wanted to be his disciples. And that is us. We are people who are seeking Jesus, and we are seeking to be his disciples. But I want us to spend some time this morning, and the rest of our sermon this morning is going to be focused on asking ourselves, basically, why are you here? Why are you here with this group? Why are you seeking Jesus? I mean, you're here in body, hopefully in mind too, if I don't put you to sleep. And you're listening to these things, and we're worshiping together. But if you're like me, I need to constantly examine my motives. And that's what this is about. We've looked at a bunch of people who had all sorts of motives that weren't good. But we know that there are good motives for seeking Jesus. But ultimately, I want to talk about some things that can kind of get in the way, some motives that aren't so great sometimes. Why do you seek Jesus? Is it because you're just curious? Look over in Luke chapter 23 with me. Luke 23. Luke 23 in verse 7. We know that Herod had been wanting to see Jesus for quite a while. And he finally gets an opportunity when Jesus is put on trial. In Luke chapter 23, verse 7, beginning, "And as soon as he, as Pilate, knew that he, Jesus, belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at the time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he desired for a long time to see him, because he heard many things about him and hoped he'd see some miracle done. And he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt, and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate." The Bible tells us that Herod wanted to see Jesus, and now is his opportunity. And really is because ever since he had killed John the Baptist, and the text says he wants to see miracles. He wants to see a show. Now that's not a strange motivation, is it? A lot of people seek spiritual things out these days really for entertainment. But we're talking about us. Herod was curious. He wanted to see this Jesus of Nazareth and to see if there would be some show he'd put on. And Jesus, of course, doesn't cooperate. In fact, he keeps his mouth shut. And so Herod rewards him and his soldiers by mocking him and mistreating him and so forth. And then they send him back to Pilate. You're here today. Why do you seek Jesus? Are your motives somewhat like Herod's? Are you merely curious? When we look at Paul and we see some of the things that he faced in his ministry, that he had some of the same problems with people who stood up, or when he stood before various magistrates, some were curious, some wanted a bribe, some were just kind of interested to see what would happen, but none of them really were interested in the pursuit of knowledge. It was more because they were bored. Is the worship of Jesus something to do for you and for me, or are we just curious? It's a question that we need to ask ourselves. Why am I here? What's motivating me to be here? What's motivating me to look into things about Jesus of Nazareth? Because people have had motives like Herod where, yeah, they wanted to see him, but they wanted to see something. They wanted to see a show. They wanted to see interesting things happen. Maybe a social production of some type. That's what a lot of folks are interested in these days. Is that what you're interested in? Are you just curious? Why do you seek Jesus? Second question, is it to discredit him? Over in Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11, starting in verse 53. "And as he said these things to them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to assail him vehemently and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him and seeking to catch him in something he might say, that they might accuse him." These guys are said to be, they're lying in wait. They're waiting for something Jesus that says that's controversial or even incorrect, which we know he's not going to do that, but they're looking for something to hang on him. And of course, the scribes and Pharisees, they get up pretty close and personal sometimes. They're very much, very near Jesus, but it's with hostility. It's with contempt. It's with the desire to be confrontational. Not because they want to be intimate with him positively. They're getting in his face because they want to discredit him. They want to take away from him. And the question I have is, if these guys hated him so much, why not just leave him alone? It's a lot like dealing with people who are atheists today. You know, there's lots of folks who are atheists who just, they're like, hey, that you believe in God, that's fine, I don't, and, you know, no big deal. But then there are others who are evangelical about it, right? They want to convert others to their atheism, and there's a lot of hostility. Richard Dawkins is one of those guys that's pretty well known. He is an avid evangelical atheist. Never thought you'd hear that, evangelical atheist together. But it's true, they're real, they exist. Then you think, well, why not just let people go? Because there's something more to it for them. And I think we see part of this in Luke's gospel, in Luke chapter 16. A couple of chapters over, Luke 16, verse 13 beginning. Jesus is saying, no servant can serve two masters. Or you will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Jesus called them out and said, you guys are looking to discredit me so you can justify yourselves. And I think that just so happens to be one of the reasons why people are militant in their atheism, is because they don't want other people out there who would judge them or look at them and say, hey, what you're doing isn't right. I mean, none of us like that, right? I still don't like having someone tell me, hey, that wasn't the right thing to do. I'm hopefully mature enough to know that I need to take inventory of that and, if need be, correct and repent of what I've done or thought. But the bottom line is, some people refuse to be corrected. They refuse to repent. And so anyone who's out there who holds to an ideal or a moral standard that finds them lacking, they hate that. They must destroy it. And Jesus is the personification of those things, isn't he? And so people have been and will be motivated to discredit him so that it makes them look better. If Jesus is a lunatic and if he's just a nice guy and not a savior and not a God risen from the dead, then it removes all these burdens and responsibilities. I don't have to listen to him. But if he really is the Son of God and there is authority and power clearly in that title, then I do have to answer to him, and I don't want to do that. I want to justify myself. Myself and another preacher are having a study with a guy from Chicago right now who is very knowledgeable in like all these world religions. And I've had to be boning up on the Quran and all sorts of other stuff. This guy's got me spinning in circles right now. But we can't tell yet where his motivation is. I think there's genuineness in it, but there's also some looking to justify himself. And so we'll see what wins out. Pray for that for me. Pray for this guy named Jason. Because there's opportunities there, but you still don't know what people's motives are until they reveal them. And there are people who seek Jesus not to obey him, but so they can discredit him. They come to Bible studies or gospel meetings or things, and they want to poke holes in. They want to ask questions to stump the preacher or stump the teacher, not because they want to learn, but because they want to justify themselves. So that they don't have to go home and feel like, I have to change. Is that you? Is that me? Am I seeking Jesus because I want to justify myself? Discrediting him makes me feel better about myself and the things I've done? How about to use him? Over in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, verse 25. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Jesus answered them and said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him." Jesus says, I know why you're seeking after me. It's because you got fed, not because the miracles have led you to believe in me. So let me interpret that in our vernacular. They were using him. Now, the first two points we've talked about so far, to discredit him or just to be curious, I doubt that's going to apply to too many people in groups like ours here. In fact, there probably isn't anybody here. It may be. But of the ones we've talked about, the one that I think is the most likely to happen is this one. Because I know I have used Jesus before. I like to I draw the analogy of the genie in the lamp. Because there are times when I more or less treat God like he's a genie stuffed in a lamp that I set on the shelf. I go and get it when I need it and rub it and poof, there's God. Okay, God, give me this. And then when I'm done, I cram them back in and shove them on the shelf. And I'm ashamed to say that, but sometimes I've treated him that way. Maybe you have too. But that's not how a relationship works. That's a narcissistic approach to God, and narcissism is not good. It's the definition of selfishness and self-love in all the worst kinds of way. A relationship is about loving someone else and elevating them to a post of great importance and prominence. The most important in our case of Jesus. But if I'm going to be honest, my brothers and sisters, I have struggled at times with seeking Jesus to get stuff out of him. In fact, I can recall a time in my life when I was a lot younger, when even as a preacher, I came to a realization that I was more focused on the good Jesus could do for me in this life than I was about the life to come. In other words, I had it backwards, that this life was the substance, that this life was why I served Jesus, and then the life to come, well, that's just the icing on the cake. No, that's backwards. I serve Jesus for ultimately for the rewards of the life to come, and whatever goes right here in this life, I should be grateful, because I don't deserve it. Because this life in this world is broken, it is filled with hardship, and heartache, and sorrow, and pain, and the devil wants us to think, living in our rich culture, that it's different here, but it's not. And that's one of the hard things young people have to learn, is that the hopes and dreams that you grow up with, life's going to have other things, and I have to say about that. And not to be a killer of dreams, but the sooner we realize that this world promises a lot and delivers nothing, the better we'll be. Because the more we will seek for the only true source of satisfaction. But if we use him, if we approach this as, well, I'm going to take from Jesus a one-way street. You know, if in any other human relationship, if you've got a child who's, or a friend who's dating someone who clearly it's all about them and not about the other person, you'd say, run for the hills. Your relationship's a one-way street. And rightly so, but when it comes to God, sometimes we will accept that behavior even from ourselves, won't we? That's not good. That's not how a relationship with the love of our lives is supposed to work. Why do you seek Jesus? Is it to love him? John chapter 20. John chapter 20. First two verses beginning. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. And she ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him." Jump down to verse 11. But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. and saw two angels in white, sitting one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they have laid him." Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" And she, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say, "teacher." Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God." Let me ask, why did Mary come to the tomb? We know that both she and the disciples still were not in tune with the resurrection. That they still weren't understanding it. Later, they understand how the verses and the things Jesus said all fit together. But right now, that's not why she's coming. She's not expecting angels at the head and the foot of where his body was. She's not expecting an open tomb. She's not expecting a risen Savior. She's coming for what purpose? Why does anyone go to a grave? Because they love that person. Because they love them. And they want to show that sign. They want to be somewhere that still feels like there's a connection. Mary was not coming to Jesus to get anything from him, but to give, to help preparing and continuing preparation for his body, and to show her love. Her motives were selfless. She came to Jesus not expecting anything except to show her love. And at that, love of a corpse. And I look at that and I see in such a simple story such a pure motivation. Why do you seek Jesus? Is it to love him? We know that's the only right answer, to love him. That's the one that ultimately we're all aspiring to mature to. Now, don't get me wrong. Seeking Jesus for the benefit of yourself and your life, the Bible makes it clear it's the very best thing you can do. We talked about it in class in John chapter 10. I have come to give life, and I come to give it that they may have it abundantly. Jesus wants us to live. The highest life we can have on this earth is doing it Jesus' way. There's no question. Now, there's going to be hardships and sorrows, but that's going to be true no matter what level and what people aspire to. If we do it his way, we will reach the highest level of satisfaction. Why? Because ultimately we know that this is the relationship that will endure, and that because love is eternal, even faith and hope, Paul says, aren't eternal. One day, that which you've hoped for, that you've had faith in, you see with your eyes. But love endures forever. And so that means our love for him is not going to be stuck in the casket with us like all the physical things that we may leave behind, that we will leave behind. The way we have loved and the consequences it brings us, we will carry with us forever. So, if we seek to love him, we are seeking the very highest purpose and motive that we can possibly have. And I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty good to me. Having purpose, holding on to something that can never be taken away, that even in my physical death, will be restored to me upon the return of my spirit to my body and the resurrection and the transformation into the glorious body. There will be love, and that relationship will only be further enhanced and perfected. It's the only motive that endures forever. Why do you seek Jesus? What is the reason that you're looking for him? Well, just in conclusion this morning, to me, I'm the one up here preaching, so I guess that's the benefit of being up here. I find a lesson like this to really step on my toes. And as I always say, I preach a sermon for myself. That way, if I put everybody to sleep in the audience, at least one person learns something. But I think we can see the value in this, the need to challenge ourselves in a culture where everything is so much about feelings that ultimately it means everything is narcissism. Everything is about what makes me happy. And when people claim to love God and to make it all about themselves, they have failed to understand the message of the gospel. And I don't say that to judge people. I say that to warn them and to warn myself. The only reason that is suitable to seek Jesus is to love Him and to follow Him. You all know that. I know that. But there are days when my selfishness is vying to take over. And maybe somebody in the audience can sympathize with that. Why are you here? What motivates you to seek Jesus? I'll tell you for sure that if you seek Him, you'll find Him. The Bible makes that clear. Jesus' own words make it clear. Paul says in Acts 17, in one of the greatest sermons we have, he pictures man kind of groping about in the darkness, but he says, God is there to be found. It's a done deal. You will find Him. You just have to take the time to seek. And my friend, if you're not yet a Christian, I encourage you, start seeking Jesus now. And He says, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. The beginning of your walk, the beginning of your seeking of Jesus is becoming a disciple the way He says. And you can begin to continue to seek, because everyone here who's a Christian, no matter how old they are still seeking Him, aren't we? No matter how long we've been a Christian, we are still seeking Him because we are still perfecting that relationship. Been married to my wife. There you are. I was pointing over there at Ellie. My glasses on is what happens. Coming up on 16 years in August, and I don't anticipate ever stopping to seek her in all the ways that I can know her, because that's what love does. Love doesn't say, yeah, you know, I think I know you well enough. The kids turn 15. Yeah, get out of the house. Now that might be tempting for other reasons, but... We understand that love says, keep going. That love doesn't say, yeah, I think I've had enough of you. You stay right there. That's not what love does. Love says, give me more of the people we love and most especially of the God we love. So, if you're seeking Jesus this morning, you need to start with the new birth, the rebirth that comes through His blood and baptism. I suspect most of us here have already committed to seeking Him. Is there something about our motivation this morning that is lacking? Have we talked about something today that stepped on your toes and said, you know, this isn't just something I need to get better on. I've been sinful about this. I have traded God's love in for more like a genie in a bottle, or I've been seeking ways to study more to justify how I want to live versus how He tells me. There are so many ways this can apply. If it does to you this morning, take care of it. And leave here seeking Jesus for the purest of reasons, to love Him and to be with Him for all eternity. Can we help you this morning in some way? If so, let us know how. Come now as we stand and sing.